Have you ever witnessed a miracle? Think about it. Here we are today. We have just baptized John Adam in the name of our triune God. He is alive. He is here, somewhere in the building. We know the science of it all, you know, the birth of new life, that is. But do we comprehend the miracle of it? Not only a new life, but a life that is spirit, mind, body, all capable of development and in ways that have yet to unfold, rooted in deep relationship bonds of love. Isn't that a miracle? A miracle is not about the science we can understand with our minds. A miracle is about the science that transcends what we can understand with our minds alone. A miracle is not about the mechanics of how something happens, but what's measurable. It's about the possibilities that become real beyond anything we could imagine possible or real. Unless we understand the birth of a child in that way, are we truly understanding it for what it is? Let me provide another example. It was the 1990s. I was a minister in rural Quebec. The English-speaking community was small, and all the churches worked together for various events and activities. And I knew the Baptist minister and his wife fairly well. Then when I arrived, she had already been through one bout of cancer. It had been serious, but after surgery and chemotherapy, she was now in remission. She had a beautiful voice and would sing solos in the church. Her voice had come back, and she was doing what she loved best in worship. But after a few years more, the cancer returned, even more aggressively. Eventually, she was hospitalized. When I went to visit her for what I thought would be the last time, she could barely speak without coughing. Her chest was full of fluid. She couldn't eat. For all the praying we were doing as churches, the science at this point seemed crystal clear. She would die within days. I anticipated hearing the news any day, but weeks passed and no news. I checked with people I knew at the hospital. They said something astonishing. They said she was better. She was eating. She was talking. Had anything changed in her treatment? No, they said. There was no active treatment. Another few weeks, and she was released. Another few months, and she was back singing in church. What had happened? The doctors had no answers. These things do happen sometimes, they said. In fact, they happened more times than many knew. The science seemed clear enough, but this was nothing short of a miracle. I eventually moved on from ministry in Quebec, and when I left, she was still singing solos at church. And there was still no answers, scientifically speaking, from the point of view of her church. Well, the miracle of healing was about healing that went beyond medical science. It had to be a miracle of faith and of prayer. Now, let me say that this is but one of many stories I've encountered in ministry where people recover, they do, against what seem like impossible scientific odds. And many of you may know such stories in your own lives too. On the other hand, I and we, I'm sure, have many stories of people who prayed and were prayed for, people of genuine faith, courage, and grace, who never made it. The science was brutally clear and there was no way into recovery. So how do we explain all this? Well, let's begin with some hard science. In the last several decades, a considerable amount of research has been funded on the links between faith and healing, as well as prayer and healing. This has been done over a significant period of time. Conditions tracked include heart disease, cancer, as well as conditions like anxiety or depression or other autoimmune body-mind illnesses. Whether it's survival rates, recovery rates, longevity, or quality of life, there is now considerable scientific evidence within the community that praying for people in a heartfelt, consistent way and having faith and hope in what's possible for oneself and for others, it can make a significant difference when it comes to health and healing. That's the science, and you can look it up. But what about the miracle? Where is the miracle exactly? How do we activate the maximum conditions for miracles to happen? Let's delve into our scripture readings in search of some revelatory insight. Our first reading from Kings chronicles the adventures of one of Israel's early prophets, as I mentioned earlier. Elijah is his name. And it's a tough time for Elijah. He's a prophet persecuted by a corrupt king and queen. Their names are Ahab and Jezebel. They hate Elijah because he's not into flattery. He doesn't want to play that role, but he's into honest truth-telling. The corruption in the court and the abuse of the vulnerable for the greater amassing of wealth and power, it's intolerable. It's intolerable for a nation supposedly devoted to the God of the Ten Commandments. And so Elijah will not be silent, even if he has to go into hiding to survive. But to hide, he has to find people willing to risk their own lives because they believe in what he's doing. And this is also a terrible time for Israelites in general, especially the poor. There is a drought in the land, and people are hungry. Resources are scarce. Elijah needs somewhere to stay and something to eat. Who can provide for him, given their own needs? Who would risk their safety? Elijah finds someone. She's a widow with a child. Elijah asks her for some water and bread. She hesitates. She only has enough for herself and her child, and even then, enough for maybe a few days. But Elijah, he challenges her. Now, even though this may seem insensitive and thoughtless of him to demand it, he challenges her to help him and have faith. But what about the facts? The scientific facts. There's only so much food. An extra mouth to feed is an extra mouth to feed. But here's where the miracle begins to happen. What if your faith and your hope, they empower you. They empower you to imagine that maybe doing the right thing, even at your own personal cost, it may open up possibilities you cannot see if you're paralyzed by hopelessness and helplessness. What if faith and hope in choosing to do the loving thing above all else, what if that will open up options for you can never imagine? You see, true miracles, they're not magic. If it's just magic, well, it's spectacular in itself, but nothing substantial changes in the order of things in the person you become or the world around you. Nothing really has changed other than experiencing that miracle and having something to talk about. But if we reread these ancient miracle stories as stories of empowerment and transformation, as an awakening of faith and hope and love and in those people healed, if we read them that way, what is it that we see? This woman sees this prophet who is persecuted, this prophet who represents the true God of justice against a larger corrupt regime. She is awakened to act with faith and hope, even though It may do her and her child in sooner than later, but she's somehow awakened to act this way, courageously. And she goes for it. She chooses to be generous to Elijah, and somehow doors open. It's a miracle, for sure, it is. But what happens inside her is a miracle just as much what happens to her tangible circumstances. How can someone change like this and rise up like this when all around her people are just hopeless and helpless and waiting to die? Somehow, something else happens to her. Through Elijah, God is working to awaken a woman to what's possible beyond the apparently impossible. Somehow, Elijah, she and her child survive the famine, and she is empowered to hope that God is still alive and active. Even though the powers that be are diabolical and the economic and social realities around her are bleak, somehow she comes to believe that God is alive and active in simple, hidden, miraculous ways, and the widow, she's a living witness to this reality. Who knows how she can then maybe affect the people around her with faith and hope too? It can become infectious. That they can get through this and that they are people who can rise up and get a better deal from their rulers. Now, wouldn't that be a miracle? Let's look at our gospel story for another example of how the miraculous becomes real. Jesus encounters a man who's crippled. He's unable to see. He's among other people who are likewise ill. They're all near this pool of water, and it's purported to possess miraculous healing properties. And this happens whenever there are moments when the water is somehow stirred from some kind of phenomenon in the ground. Now, our science today would be able to figure out what really happens to stir the water underground. But the point is, people claim that when the water is stirred, anyone who gets into it or makes it into the water may be healed. It's magic. But the man in our story, he's terribly helpless and virtually hopeless. He has been sick for so many years, and he's never managed to get himself in the pool of water at the right moment. He just can't move fast enough. And everyone else, well, there's no one there to help him because they're busy getting themselves in the water at the right moment. No one cares enough to help him. So this man's disease, it's not just physical. He is helpless, and he's hopeless, and he's deprived of active, caring love coming his way. And so what does Jesus do? Well, first of all, you know, Jesus doesn't snap his fingers. Jesus engages. He bypasses all the supposed magic of the pool. He never even mentions it. You know, let go of those magic pills and remedies and therapies advertised, in effect. Jesus is interested in the man himself. He shows him, you know, genuine love and attention and concern. He notices him specifically in that crowd, and he goes to him. He then challenges him to give up his helplessness in mind and spirit. He challenges him. That's a real risk to do that. He challenges him to rise up, to claim responsibility for his life and his illness. You know, there's lots he can't change, like any of us. But what can be changed? What can be changed with the right inspiration and empowerment? What can he do to maximize the healing energies in his body through his thinking and the spiritual powers activated by a divine current? You see, healing in the Gospels, like in other parts of the Bible too, it's always about the mind and spirit as much as it is about the body. The science can document concrete healing happening, but the miracle is in how people are changed and transformed even before any kind of physical healing happens, even if it happens or not. People are changed. And people are changed and transformed even when the prognosis is fatal, eventually. Blessing and transformation happens in so many ways we cannot fathom, and at so many levels But we can't fathom it when we're stuck too narrowly in our hopes for a specific outcome alone. If that doesn't happen, nothing's working. With a lot of love and a lot of faith and hope, people can be changed in their whole inner outlook, and the healing energies within them are maximized. Miracles happen in all kinds of ways when we have the eyes to see them and the hearts to experience them as miracles. In the case of the man in our gospel story, his paralysis is healed. Who knows how he became paralyzed in the first place? But until Jesus, the healer, encountered him and showed him abundant love and attention, and then challenged him to rise up, he was stuck in his paralysis. The widow, like all those around her, was living doom and gloom of a fatalism that was like a blanket covering all the people. She, like the paralyzed man, they were just two individuals. But Elijah and Jesus saw something in their humanity, incredible potential for transformation as human beings who would not be defined by their illness or misfortune. And this, my friends, brings it all back to us here today. Now, we know the science of health and illness much more thoroughly and comprehensively today than in biblical times. And that's a great thing. But it can also sometimes become an obstacle. It can narrow our vision to specific outcomes and undermine our openness to the miraculously possible and real every single day in so many ways. The birth of new life, it's a miracle because even though we may understand the science of it, the possibilities of life when love and care are poured into it, they're limitless. People live and die every day. Sometimes we can explain it, other times we cannot. But how we live it, it can make all the difference, not only for ourselves, but for the world around us. How can we become a blessing in ways that can transform others? How is God in our life a ground and source for such transformation? And how are faith, hope, and love active ingredients in maximizing healing energies? May we be awakened to the miraculous possibilities and realities all around us and within us. And may we give abundant thanks whenever and however they happen. Amen.